Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, October 25th. I'm your reader, Mary Francis. The front page of the journal today shows a big article titled Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead Traditions. And then another article, a little bit smaller, that I'm going to start with, is entitled Shooter Sentenced to 10 to 25 Years in Prison. We'll start with hard news here. Man who fired at the South Sioux City Police in court. And it shows a mugshot of the man. And this is Dateline Dakota City. Having another person fire a gun at you is something no one should have to deal with, Mitchell Conklin said. Yet, because Richard Germick, that's G-E-R-M-E-K, fired a shot at him and threatened other first responders, the South Sioux City police officer said, July 22, 2022 is a day he and others who were with him will never forget. Quote, although I don't lose sleep at night, I'd be lying if I said I don't think about it every day, Conklin said Tuesday at Germick's sentencing hearing in Dakota County District Court. Germick, 62, who pleaded no contest in September to attempted use of a deadly weapon to commit a felony, criminal attempt, and terroristic threats, was sentenced to 10 to 25 years in prison for the incident, in which police and emergency personnel had responded to a call about a possible overdose in an apartment at 320 East 12th Street in South Sioux City. Paramedics who arrived prior to police evacuated the apartment once Germick brandished a gun. Police officers made contact with Germick inside his apartment and ordered him to drop the weapon before he fired at one of the officers. An officer returned fire and struck Germick, who was then taken to a Sioux City hospital and treated for non-life-threatening injuries. No officers were injured. Germick declined the chance to speak before he was sentenced. His attorney, Lavontree Hunter, had asked for a prison sentence of no longer than 3 years, saying Germick is a military veteran who has post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health issues, along with health problems. Germick uses a wheelchair and was breathing with the assistance of what appeared to be an oxygen tank. Germick tends to self-medicate with alcohol rather than seek professional help for his mental health issues, Hunter said. It's a perfect example of why guns and alcohol don't mix, said District Judge Brian Meismer, M-E-I-S-M-E-R. Meismer said he empathized with Germick, who may have been failed by a system set up to help veterans. But the judge also said Germick put the lives of police officers and first responders in danger that night. It's just a sad situation. I am thankful that no one died, Meismer said. According to the terms of a plea agreement, Assistant Dakota County Attorney Sarah Hammond did not make a sentencing recommendation. Charges of unlawful discharge of a firearm, possession of a short rifle or short shotgun, obstructing a peace officer, and disturbing the peace were dismissed as part of the agreement. And back to that larger story on the front page today. It shows a large color photo of an altar, or I believe it's called an ofrenda, on display at the Sioux City Public Museum. The display is up through November 4th to mark Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. Day of the Dead typically celebrated November 1 and 2. And it shows an altar set up on a table, and there are multiple levels, and it's covered with a black tablecloth with orange flowers on it, and there are multiple photos of a man and a woman, and must be a person's parents perhaps, but there are young photos of them young and old and married and so forth. There are also flowers and candles and candy and other objects on this altar. And this is from Dolly A. Boots took the photos, and this is also her article. Framed portraits, candles, glass jars of mole sauce, coarse sea salt grains piled up and shaped like crosses, and of course a variety of decorative skulls can be found on altars at the Sioux City Public Museum now through November 4. For the past several years, local families have spent an entire weekend setting up altars at the museum to mark Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. It's a holiday that originated in Mexico and is traditionally celebrated November 1 and 2 throughout Latin America. Quote, "There's a large Hispanic community in Sioux City. This is one of their traditions," said Teresa Weaver, the museum's creator of education. Curator. Quote, "Some of the people who make the altars, I'd call second generation, so they're learning the tradition. And then some of the altars are made by people who grew up making them with their grandparents. Everybody comes to it from a little different place," unquote. This year, Morningside University students, Irving Elementary School families, and friends of the museum created the altars for Orgulloso Hasta Los Huesos, Proud to the Bone. The exhibition honors and welcomes deceased loved ones. Quote, "We're focusing on Skills, Calaveras, and La Catrina, which is the female figure that is found as part of the festivities," said Weaver. She noted that museum visitors and local students were also invited to make papel picado skulls out of tissue paper for the exhibition. Quote, "All of those skulls will be incorporated into our museum exhibit," unquote. The museum's 2023 Dia de los Muertos logo, which was designed by Chloe Wagner of Western Iowa Tech Community College's Design Club, features La Calavera Katrina, who is a tall female skeleton wearing an elaborate hat with feathers. The design also includes candles and roses, traditional parts of the altar. The logo is being used on stickers, brochures, and t-shirts for the hundreds of volunteers who take part in the museum's festival. Weaver said some elements on the dozen or so altars will be similar, but she said each one has its, quote, own personality. She said that typically you'll see photographs of loved ones and religious elements such as candles. Quote, "We have to remember this is people coming back to visit, so the candles light the way. Usually you'll see water. They've been on a journey, so they'll have water to drink. The salt is purifying," said Weaver. She mentioned that salt fashioned into a cross combines an Aztec tradition with Catholicism. Quote, "Originally the skulls were sugar, and that was just to taste that life is sweet. Death is sweet. It's not meant to be scary, and it isn't scary," unquote. Marigolds, which are blooming in Mexico at this time, are another staple on Day of the Dead altars. Their scent draws the spirits to the altars, according to Weaver. She said the personal items are related to the loved ones who are being honored. For example, an altar might hold a certain brand of alcohol that a departed family member liked to drink, or music he or she enjoyed listening to. There's a worldview here that we want to share and talk about and explore so that we get to know our neighbors, Weaver said. It's amazing that they're willing to share this with us because it's very personal for them. If you go, so what is it? Day of the Dead / Dia de los Muertos fashion show, performances, M's formal fashion show, ballet folklorico, new stage players, and refreshments. And this will all be happening from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at the Sioux City Public Museum, which is at 607 4th Street, and 1 to 4 on Sunday at the museum. They'll have La Perla Tapiata, a dance group from Irving Elementary School. They'll have the Morningside Spanish Club Readers Theater performing Little Monster, What Pan Dulce Do You Want?, crafts, face painting, and refreshments. And again, that is from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday. And turning the page, school district proposes buying land for school. This is from Caitlin Yamada of the Sioux City Journal. The Sioux City Community School District is planning to purchase land, formerly known as the Southern Hills Country Club, for a combined Sunnyside and Nodland Elementary School. The 43 acres of land is located at 2900 South Street in Aubin, A-U-B-I-N, 2832 South Patterson Street, and 4243 Lincoln Way. It will cost the district $457,000 from the sales tax fund. The Sioux City Community School Board set a public hearing for the purchase for 6 p.m. November 13th. After that hearing, the board will vote on whether or not to purchase the land. School Board President Dan Greenwell said the land would be used to build a combined Sunnyside and Nodland facility. He said the construction on such a facility is, quote, several years away. Currently, Sunnyside Elementary is located at 2700 South Maple Street. Nodland Elementary is located at 3300 South Cypress Street. Tim Paul, the district's operations and maintenance director, said the district has been looking for land in the Morningside area because the Sunnyside site would be too small for a new facility. Superintendent Rod Earlywine said that when the opportunity was brought forward to him, he said it was a no-brainer to look at purchasing it so that in 5 to 7 years a new school could be built in that neighborhood. He said if they wanted to expand the Sunnyside land, they would have to purchase homes, which could be more expensive. Nodland is pre-K through second grade. Sunnyside is third through fifth grades. Earlywine said Sunnyside and Nodland are the only separate elementary schools in the district, and combining them would make the elementary schools consistent throughout Sioux City. Paul said there are contingencies on the purchase, including an environmental survey of the land. The school board members spoke positively about the prospect of purchasing new land in the Morningside area. Quote, acquiring property like this, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity almost, said Greenwell. Board member Bob Michelson asked where the entrance for the new facility could be. Paul said there is a variety of options. He said he plans to go over the property with a civil engineer to get more suggestions for entrance, but will depend on where they decide to put the building. And then there are two photos accompanying this article. One is the entrance of the Sunnyside School, and the other is the entrance of the Nodland Elementary School. In news briefs, Sac City, Iowa. A Lytton, Iowa man has pleaded guilty of having sexual contact with a 13-year-old girl. Antonia Farms, age 38, entered his plea Monday in Sac County District Court to 4 counts of lascivious acts with a child. Sentencing was scheduled for November 6. According to current terms of a plea agreement filed Monday, he will receive a 40-year prison sentence. 4 counts of second-degree sexual abuse will be dismissed. Farms is charged with performing sex acts with the girl on 4 occasions in April and May, inside and outside her home. The Sac County Sheriff's Office began an investigation June 30, when the girl's father learned of messages between Farms and his daughter. Farms was arrested later that day on a charge of violating a no-contact order in an unrelated case. During a subsequent interview at the Child Advocacy Center in Waterloo, the girl said he had sexual contact with Farms. Next brief, Pork Tornadoes bring show to Sioux City. The Iowa cover band The Pork Tornadoes is all set to make a return appearance to Sioux City's Hard Rock Anthem. 8 p.m. Saturday, December 16, The Rock four-piece will play their show. Ticket prices, $15 for standing general admission to $40 for the VIP booth. Tickets are available at hardrockcasinosiouxcity.com, or you can get them in person at The Rock Shop. All events at the Anthem are limited to guests 21 and older. Next brief, FBI confirms ongoing investigation near Whiting, Iowa, but, quote, cannot comment further. The FBI is conducting an investigation near Whiting, a spokesman for the federal law enforcement agency confirmed on Tuesday. Quote, the FBI is at the location conducting a court-authorized search. Because it is an ongoing investigation, I cannot comment further, said Amy Adams, a public affairs specialist for the FBI Omaha field office. The property the FBI is searching is west of Whiting and close to the Missouri River. No additional information was immediately available. And then we have a correction. It says, solid waste stickers are available for $1.50 at City Hall, Hy-Vee, Fairway, Walmart, and Bomgars, the Hamilton location only of Bomgars. Due to incorrect information provided by the City of Sioux City, the wrong price was included in a brief headlined, Yard Waste Should Not Be Disposed Of in the Street. And that had appeared on page A2 of the Sioux City Journal's October 20 edition. So once again, the correct price is $1.50. And that's all we have for local hard news in the Sioux City Journal today. So we're going to switch over to the Storm Lake Times pilot. On the front page here, first story, bird flu wipes out BV flock. Eighth infection in the county in 18 months. Avian influenza scored yet another turkey flock in Buena Vista County, its eighth infection in the last 18 months. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship reported a flock of around 50,000 turkeys was infected with avian influenza October 20th. It was the county's eighth infection since the virus reappeared in North America after a seven-year hiatus, and the third infection in Iowa in the last 3 days. Poultry flocks in Guthrie and Pocahontas counties were culled over the weekend. The disease's infectious pressure is great, given the fall migration has been underway for over a month, said James Roth, director of the Center for Food Security and Public Health in the College of Veterinary Medicine at Iowa State University. The virus has also spread throughout the Western Hemisphere. Its first outbreak, in 2015, was limited to pockets of North America, Roth noted. Quote, it doesn't look like it's going away, Roth said in an interview on Monday, and the quote continues, it looks like the virus may not go away, but it's hard to tell. It's less than a year than it was. It's less than it was at this time last year, although it's picking up kind of fast, and it may be that enough wild birds are infected that they're starting to develop some immunity. So it's really hard to tell where this is going. Roth said it's an open question whether the disease is endemic to North America. In other words, the disease will regularly occur in the Midwest during waterfowl migratory patterns, like it has for the last 2 years. An endemic avian influenza carries sweeping ramifications for the poultry industry, a multi-billion-dollar enterprise that's concentrated in Iowa and surrounding states. Rembrandt Enterprises, for example, lost over $40 million in losses between two avian influenza outbreaks in 2015 and 2022, according to federal contracting data obtained by the Storm Lakes pilot. The company has not specified the extent to which it has revamped operations since it culled over 5.3 million chickens last March. Other companies, like Tyson and Independent Growers, lost anywhere from several thousand dollars to millions of dollars. They were also made whole by the indemnity payments by the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Appropriations for indemnity payments are not guaranteed. They are appropriated every year by Congress. Roth believes the industry can operate even if the disease continues to spread every year. Infections in the spring and fall, the time that migratory patterns become more intense, are decreasing with each season. There were 11 avian influenza cases in Iowa from last October to this January. Since the beginning of the month, there have only been 3. To Roth, that suggests producers can prevent the disease, even if its presence is constant. He noted the consensus among experts at the U.S. Animal Health Association's annual meeting was to continue with heightened biosecurity efforts, like farm workers washing boots or changing clothes before entering a livestock operation. The consensus opted against vaccinating poultry, which has gained steam since the virus began infecting mammals. A growing block of researchers have expressed concern that the virus could mutate and eventually transfer to humans, but it has yet to do so. And vaccinating poultry could have consequences even more extreme than chronic infections throughout the Midwest. Export markets have expressed reservations with buying vaccinated poultry. Quote, I think for now the consensus seems to be not to start vaccinating. Biosecurity is working better, Roth said. And he continues, it's been a challenge to manage, but producers have been doing a good job at keeping the virus at bay, unquote. And on the front page of the Storm Lake Times, there are 3 photographs of young women, and there's a 4th photograph. Maria Toge, as she points at a map in a classroom setting, it looks like. The headline is ESL Classes Transform Lives at ICCC. English Learners Break Language Barriers, Craft Bright Futures. And this is written by Megan Mulseed. At Iowa Central Community College in Storm Lake, students are immersing themselves in English mastery through ESL courses and beyond. Held at Storm Lake's Prairie Lakes AEA building, these classes provide a supportive environment, allowing students to master American-English intricacies while pursuing both ESL and high school equivalency degrees, also known as HSED. Among these students is Danny Estefanos. Estefanos's journey began early this year when he arrived in the United States from Eritrea with a strong determination to build a future in Storm Lake. Quote, "That's why I come to school," the Iowa Central Community College student says of the classes. For Estefanos and his classmates, the path to English fluency and HSED is challenging but rewarding. Quote, "Sometimes you have to follow a lot of rules," he remarks, acknowledging the nuances of the English language. "But they change sometimes, and remembering it all can be hard," he adds, "but it's getting better." The college's educational programs exhibit flexibility, offering day and night classes to accommodate various schedules and commitments. HSED instructor Sarah Schoper Salazar emphasized the importance of adaptability. "It's important that we make it workable for each student to work at their own pace," she says. Beyond the classroom, the local institution fosters a vibrant atmosphere where shared experiences resonate in the halls. The learning environment in the halls of Storm Lake's Iowa Central Community College is enriched by coffee breaks infused with international flavors and home country delicacies. In the well-stocked coffee break room, conversations flow, accompanied by aromatic coffee and an array of snacks, including homemade dishes from diverse cultures. Mayela Morelos, an ESL student, appreciates these moments. "We love it when people bring their snacks in to share," she says with a grin. "There's some very, very good food that bring people in," she adds. Laura Gonzalez Panera, who hails from Cuba, says she dreams of continuing her medical career in the United States. She was a medical doctor in Cuba. The ESL student says these local classes are a lifeline. Like many of her fellow classmates, her ability to read and understand American English came way before fully grasping how to speak it. Quote, "The classes, they are like a lifeline for me," she explains. "It was hard for me before, but now I feel better." Another ESL student, Maria Zelaya, agrees, adding that the classes offered at the local community college are great because the teachers are willing to help. She adds that the students offer valuable support to one another as they learn. "It's good to come here each day for the classes," she explains. "We're all wanting to learn the language, and we're all helping each other when we can." Guadalupe Manriquez started taking her ESL courses in recent weeks, despite living in the area for some time. For her, these classes are family-focused. With young children in the Storm Lake School District, Manriquez has found that she needs to learn the language to complete seemingly simple tasks. Quote, "The language we speak at home is not English," she explains. "My kids do speak English at school." For Manriquez, learning to speak American English is aiding her in daily tasks like setting up doctor's appointments for her children, going to the grocery store with her kids, or even communicating with the schools, a component that many parents know is core to helping their young students excel in the classroom. ESL classmate Ball Masengo adds that while American English can be a challenging language to learn to speak, it's important that everyone who is trying to keep going at their own pace. "We can't compare with each other," he says. "I know my English isn't the same as somebody else's. We're all here to learn. We all want the same thing," agrees Asai Zochikal, another student at the local college. He continues, "And this is a great place to learn a new language," unquote. And then in the center of the page, front page of the Storm Lake Times pilot, there's just a stunning photograph of the shoreline of a lake, and it's showing absolutely fiery hues in trees. The trees are in full bloom right now with their fall colors, bright reds and oranges and shockingly yellow yellows. So it's a beautiful photo taken by Bruce Kurtz. Our next article from the front page of the Storm Lake Times: Tyson harassment lawsuit dismissed. Terms of settlement not disclosed. This is written by Amber Mommond. A sexual harassment and gender discrimination lawsuit against Tyson's Storm Lake pork plant was dismissed. A 10-day trial was slated to start October 31 for Alia Betancourt, who sued Tyson and three of its former and current managers. Quote, "The case will not go to trial next week," said Nathan Voss, a West Des Moines attorney representing Betancourt. They told that to the Storm Lake Times and continued, "The matter has now been resolved," unquote. Betancourt used to work at Tyson in Storm Lake as an assembly worker on the cutting line for 22 years. She claimed she was forced out of her job twice, first in 2006, again in January of 2020. Betancourt also claimed that Jose Montalongo, a former Tyson employee, started harassing her after she rejected his romantic advances, according to the petition filed in June 2021. And when she reported the harassment to human resources at Tyson, the petition claims the company did nothing to stop it. Last month, attorneys for both parties met for a summary judgment hearing, which can result in a decision being made based on statements and evidence without going to trial, arguing on which claims should proceed. At the time, both parties acknowledged that mediation is not likely. Last week, a motion was filed on behalf of Betancourt to, quote, "voluntary dismiss with prejudice her claim against defendant Jose Montalongo only," unquote. This dismissal with prejudice is without prejudice to and is without effect upon plaintiff's claim against defendant Tyson Fresh Meats, Inc., the court record stated. A settlement amount, if one is reached, was not specified in the court documents. This is the second harassment case against Tyson that was dismissed from Buena Vista County District Court. Earlier this year, Voss represented another former Tyson employee who alleged there was a culture of sexual harassment created at the plant by a manager while working as a safety clerk from November 2017 to June 2019. The petition was filed in September 2020. It alleged that a Tyson supervisor asked a female employee, quote, "very inappropriate and unwelcome sexually charged questions," unquote. The former employee alleged that 18 months of harassment ultimately forced her out of her job at Tyson. Tyson denied the allegations, and a jury trial was scheduled for August. The suit was dismissed with prejudice, meaning the claim cannot be refiled. Another story from the front page of the Storm Lake Times Pilot: Navigator cancels CO2 pipeline, nixes plan for route near AC, Marathon. Navigator CO2 Ventures ceased efforts to construct a pipeline that would transport liquefied CO2 throughout the Midwest, including through three townships in Buena Vista County. The company, at one time, was planning to transport CO2 from Valero Ethanol's Albert City plant to a sequestration site in Illinois. But the Nebraska-based company canceled its plans to build a pipeline, dubbed the Heartland Greenway Project, citing, quote, "unpredictable nature of the regulatory and government processes involved, particularly in South Dakota and Iowa," unquote. Quote continues, "as good stewards of capital and responsible managers of people, we've made the difficult decision to cancel the Heartland Greenway Project," said Navigator CEO Matt Vining in a prepared statement on October 20th. And also the statement, quote, continues, "we are disappointed that we will not be able to provide services for our customers, and we thank them for their continued support." Navigator was slated to run through Lee, Poland, and Fairfield townships, essentially Albert City and rural Marathon. In December of 2021, company officials conducted a public meeting in Alta to discuss the pipeline's proposed route through Marathon. Of a crowd of around 100, very few expressed support for the project. Company representatives promised to make ethanol more profitable and more competitive, boosting the bottom line of the farmers that sold their grain to Valero. It even brought the Valero plant managers to endorse the project. A company representative could not be reached for comment Monday. None were persuaded at the time, and few have since been persuaded. A Des Moines Register MediaCom poll found in March that nearly 4 out of 5 Iowans opposed using eminent domain for carbon capture pipelines, like the Heartland Greenway. Many farmers were undecided, said Supervisor Kelly Snyder, a seed salesman and former deputy who used to patrol the Albert City and Marathon areas. Snyder said he tried to stay on the fence about the project. He didn't hear a lot of opposition to the Heartland Greenway, but there were concerns about eminent domain and the pipeline's suspected damage to farm ground. Snyder noted there were not many landowners who owned parcels through which the pipeline would traverse. Quote, "We only had 3 townships that it was going through, so it wasn't really affecting a lot of landowners in Buena Vista County. I just kind of stayed on the fence and was watching it. I wasn't for or against it, but yet I wanted to make sure the farmers were being compensated for the pipeline going in the ground." Snyder, however, voted for a resolution in December 2022 that expressed opposition to the Iowa Utilities Board granting eminent domain authority to projects like the Heartland Greenway. He knew Valero wanted it, but he was uncomfortable with granting eminent domain for such a project. "Just because plans for the pipeline have been canceled, it does not mean that the project is dead," Storm Lake attorney John Murray explained. Navigator still holds option agreements on certain parcels in Buena Vista and other counties in Iowa and South Dakota. Those agreements last for 3 years after signing. Quote, "The contract on those particular parcels contemplates the landowners permitting the pipeline company to construct another pipeline," said Murray, who represented landowners during proceedings surrounding the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline in 2015. Quote, "Pipeline has to exercise the option, which simply is that they have come up with the..." I'm going to try that quote again. Quote, "Pipeline has to exercise the option, which simply is they have to come up with the extra money, more." This quote does not make any sense. But it continues, "Therefore, the land rights would be then fully vested," unquote. Another pipeline could be built with those easements, Murray noted, but it would need permission from the Iowa Utilities Board and surrounding states to do so. None of the carbon pipelines showed much success with the IUB or in other states. Quote, "This could be a pipeline to nowhere," Murray said. "I'm asking how could the Iowa Utilities Board grant the power to take away land from a landowner to put a pipeline in the ground when they don't even have the rights and permits secured to shove the CO2, unquote. Summit Carbon Solutions, a competitor to Navigator, that has announced plans to build a CO2 pipeline through Cherokee, Ida, and Clay counties, is resubmitting construction permits to South Dakota Public Utility Board after it denied the project last month. The company failed to show the project would not harm the environment and the state's residents, per the board's ruling. The company is still pressing forward. Quote, "They have been a going forward state, and that is the way they put it to everyone," Murray said. He continues, "I really question how they are going to get it done, especially in South Dakota." With both pipeline companies failing to gain support in neighboring states, Murray said he is unsure how Iowa could take action on the Summit project, which is expected to sequester CO2 from 30 ethanol plants across the Midwest. Little Sioux Corn Processors of Marcus is said to have invested in the project, according to Cherokee County supervisors and investors in Little Sioux. Quote, "To me, it seems premature to be allowing this proceeding before the Iowa Utility Board, to even go forward," Murray said. Quote continues, "I don't know how they could grant the power of eminent domain when they have those questions out there," unquote. plans for Summit's proposed 2,000-mile CO2 pipeline have stalled. North Dakota regulators denied Summit a siting permit, but granted the company's request for reconsideration. South Dakota is expected to hear a reapplication. A spokesman for Summit later said the company, quote, welcomes and is well-positioned to add additional plants and communities to our project footprint, unquote. It's not often you get the opportunity to positively impact an industry that touches every farmer and rural community across the Midwest, reads the statement, which noted Summit reached easement agreements with 75% of landowners on its proposed route, which is slated to sequester carbon in North Dakota. Quote, we look forward to building a generational asset that will create new markets for the ethanol industry and farmers, unquote. And a reminder that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. There are no obituaries in the Sioux City Journal today, so now I'm going to turn over to sports. On the front page here, it shows a photo, I believe this is from the finals, of Iowa's Caitlin Clark. She's facing the camera. Her arm is up. The basketball is just touching the tip of her fingers. Her face is intense as that ball is about to release for a shot. This article is titled, A Deadly Hawkeye. Caitlin Clark of Iowa is a unanimous pick for the Associated Press preseason women's basketball All-America team for the second consecutive season. The star guard was on all 36 ballots from the national media panel that selects the AP Top 25 each week. She led the Hawkeyes to the NCAA championship for the first time in school history, where they lost to Angel Reese and LSU. Reese was also selected as a preseason All-America, appearing on 35 ballots. Elizabeth Kitley of Virginia Tech, Cameron Brink of Stanford, Paige Buchers of UConn, and Mackenzie Holmes of Indiana were all selected for the team, or also selected for the team. Kitley and Holmes tied in the voting for the fifth spot. Clark is now a three-time preseason All-American and is set to have another record year. Last season's AP Player of the Year averaged 27.8 points, 8.6 assists, and 7.1 rebounds. The senior, who has one more season left of eligibility after this year if she wants it, is 810 points behind Kelsey Plum's NCAA record of 3,528 points. Quote, Caitlin has grown the most this year in her leadership skills. As the point guard, she holds herself and everyone accountable around her, said Iowa coach Lisa Bluter. The quote continues, she has also learned this summer to become more effective coming off ball screens. She means a ton to our program, and it's hard to put it into words. She helped break the NCAA record for attendance, and she's growing the sport as a whole, not just for Iowa. Like Clark, Reese has helped the sport grow. The pair faced off in the NCAA title game last year, and nearly 10 million people tuned in. The LSU senior helped the Tigers win their first national championship while leading the SEC in scoring, 23 points per game, and rebounding, 15.4 per game, and setting an NCAA record with 34 double-doubles in a season. She's ready for an encore. Quote, she's a competitor. I think she wants to be a good leader. Last year, she was thrown into a leadership role, and she probably was learning as she went along, said LSU coach Kim Mulkey. She continues, now, because of that experience, maybe she'll be a better leader both in the locker room and on the floor. She's a special talent, unquote. Buchers is back and healthy for the first time in two seasons. She missed all of last year with a torn ACL in her left knee. That came after she missed most of her sophomore year with a lateral meniscus tear and a tibial plateau fracture. Quote, I'm feeling much stronger. I feel more confident in my body than I ever have, said Buchers, who was the AP Player of the Year as a freshman in 2021. When I step on the court, I feel like I'm ready for whatever the defense is going to throw at me, and I know people this year are going to test me, push me around, make sure I'm really healthy, make sure my knee's really good, and use physicality as a weapon against me, so I'm ready for that," unquote. Holmes is the first preseason All-American in Indiana history. She helped Indiana to one of the best seasons in school history, winning the Big Ten regular season title as she averaged 22.3 points, 7.3 rebounds, and shot 68.8% from the field. Quote, "She's healthy. She feels really confident about her knee and her body and her mind," said Indiana coach Terry Morin. He continues, "I think all of that is really good and has her in a positive place," unquote. It's the second consecutive year that Kittley has been honored as a preseason All-American. She helped Virginia Tech reach the Final Four last season for the first time in school history, averaging 18.2 points and 10.7 rebounds. Kittley decided to come back instead of enter the WNBA draft. Quote, "She's a generational player," Hokies coach Kenny Brooks said, and it continues, "I can argue she's the best player in school history." Brink averaged 15.1 points, 9.6 rebounds, and 3.5 blocks for the Cardinals last season. She's one of two players left from Stanford's 2021 title team, and more will be expected of her with the graduation of Haley Jones. Quote, "She has great hands, a great touch, and is passing really well. Cam is very competitive," said Stanford coach Tara Vandeveer, and the coach continues, "She's being aggressive and understands how important she is for our team to be out there. I think she should be in the running for Player of the Year. She's that good," unquote. All six players have been honored as AP All-Americans in the spring the past few years. Clark, Reese, and Holmes were on the first team, while Kittley and Brink were on the second team. Bukers was a unanimous first-team selection her first year. The AP started choosing a preseason team before the 1994-95 season. Here's another story from the Sioux City Journal. Promising news on fat from natural cheese. And it begins, "The Wisconsin license plate on a car that passed me on the highway said it all. Say cheese, C-H-Z-Z-Z-Z. I smiled. More than 180 years ago, Wisconsin farmers began making cheese to preserve excess milk from their cows. Today, according to the United States Department of Agriculture, Wisconsin is the top cheese-producing state, followed by California, Idaho, and New Mexico. New Mexico? I'm a native of this state, so I do know that cheese is a staple in many New Mexican dishes. Queso Blanco, for example, is a soft, crumbly white cheese, often melted into sauces to top enchiladas, or crumbled over beans, tacos, or huevos rancheros. Other cheeses inspired by Spanish-speaking cultures include queso para fryer, that's translated cheese that is fried, a favorite in the Caribbean and Central America. This mild-tasting cheese is also used in sandwiches and baked dishes, according to Goya Foods, the largest Hispanic-owned food company in the United States. How does this culturally diverse food fit into a healthy diet? Cheese is in the dairy group, one of six core elements that make up a healthy, healthful dietary pattern, according to the 2020 to 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. While this report generally recommends lower fat versions, some intriguing research suggests traditional cheeses may also be reasonable choices. Natural cheese is a fermented food made with milk, salt, probiotics, aka good bacteria, and rennet, which is an enzyme that causes milk protein to form curds. A 2022 review in the journal Microorganisms, maybe we should read that on Iris, includes cheese as a traditional fermented food. Studies from around the world, these authors say, revealed strong associations between fermented foods and reduced risk of heart disease and diabetes, as well as a lower risk of death. Cheese is also a significant source of saturated fat, which we are called to limit in our diets. Evidence is emerging, however, that we may need to judge the saturated fat in foods by the company they keep. For example, a 2022 research article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition reported that a higher intake of saturated fat from dairy foods had less of an impact on heart disease than a lower intake of these foods, especially in males. While not statistically significant, the same intake of saturated fats from non-dairy foods did not have the same favorable outcomes. How can this be? We don't know for sure, but some research suggests the mix of calcium and other nutrients in cheese may reduce how much fat we absorb from these foods, says the National Dairy Council, which is a nonprofit dairy nutrition research and education organization. At any rate, remember that a serving of natural cheese is about 1.5 ounces or a third cup of shredded cheese. As always, moderation is the key. Now we'll do a couple entertainment briefs. Tom Brady and Irina Shayk have ended their romance. Oh no. The relationship between the 46-year-old former NFL star and the 37-year-old model, which heated up in July with dates in Los Angeles and London, quote, fizzled out in recent weeks, according to TMZ. The outlet reports that there was no drama or scandal as they decided to go their separate ways. Irina previously dated Bradley Cooper from 2015 until 2019, and they've managed to maintain a healthy relationship since their breakup for the sake of their daughter. The model previously opened up about their co-parenting dynamic in an essay for Harper's Bazaar, revealing that they'd been teaching their daughter about kindness. The brunette beauty wrote in the essay, quote, "We're teaching our daughter that the most important thing in life is to be kind to people. Every time we send her to school, we're like, just remember, kindness and love." Next entertainment brief. Duran Duran rejected an offer to do a Christmas single because they thought it was corny. The Ordinary World hitmakers might be releasing the Halloween album Danse Macabre, but don't expect them to put out a Yuletide collection. Drummer Roger Taylor told Classic Pop magazine, quote, "We were approached to do a Christmas single at one point. We thought it was too cheesy, so we didn't do it. I often say we should have said yes, because we'd still be getting a ton of royalties now. No, it was too corny. I can't imagine we'd do a Christmas album now." Keyboardist Nick Rhodes added, quote, "I celebrate Christmas the same as everyone else, but it's not something close to my heart. In a strange, beautiful way, Halloween is dear to me. I love that it's a pagan celebration of craziness. As a kid, witches, black cats, demons, and monsters were much more appealing than some big guy with a beard in a red suit," unquote. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal and the Storm Lake Times Pilot. I've been your reader, Mary Frances. You are listening to the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with a print disability. You can catch this and many other of our IRIS original programs on our podcast page, which you'll find at iowaradioreading.org. It's been a pleasure to read for you today, and thanks for listening to IRIS.
Exploring Science and the Sea. 100 million years ago, Kansas was inhabited by some creatures with big, sharp teeth. Sharks up to 30 feet long. A fish that's been described as a tarpon with fangs. And a 45-foot dinosaur that was one of the deadliest predators on the planet. That's because Kansas was at the bottom of a sea that stretched from the Arctic to the Gulf of Mexico. Known as the Western Interior Sea, it was up to 1,000 miles wide. Its warm, shallow waters supported an abundance of life, including giant clams, giant fish, and giant dinosaurs. The sea took shape when shifts in Earth's crust caused parts of North America to subside. The planet was so warm then that sea level was 1,000 feet higher than it is today. Ocean water spilled into North America from both north and south. By 100 million years ago, these fingers of water had linked up. The newly formed sea stretched from Alaska, through parts of the Mountain West and the Great Plains, and down through Texas. That divided the continent into western and eastern halves, known as Laramidia and Appalachia. The contours of the Western Interior Sea varied over the millennia, and sediments created vast beds of limestone. About 65 million years ago, a gap appeared in the sea, breaking it into northern and southern branches. They quickly retreated, reuniting the two halves of North America, but leaving behind a fossil record that tells us about life in this ancient American sea. Science in the Sea, a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, is on the web at scienceandthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, with half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including Losartan, Valsartan, and Irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of Losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.